Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link. Joining us today in our final recording from VidCon is YouTuber, globetrotter, vlogger, and adventure seeker, Louis Cole from his channel, Fun for Louis. Louis travels all over the world and documents his experiences. And it's probably not an exaggeration to say he's experienced more things in the past few weeks than most people experience in an entire lifetime. The dude is the real life version of the most interesting man in the world.
Indeed.
I think.
In his YouTube channel, Fun for Louis, which hosts daily vlogs of these traveling adventures, currently has 1.5 million subscribers and 155 million video views. Some of his escapades include spearfishing in Australia, swimming with ducks in London. Yes, he did that. Integrating himself into the Himba tribe of South Africa, horseback riding in New Mexico, paraskiing in the Alps, and rowboating in Vietnam. That's just a few of his adventures. This guy has a good time.
And he's not just experiencing the stuff we wish we could experience. He's the type of guy you'd want to be experiencing this stuff alongside. He's got a positive outlook, his free spirit, his ability to live every moment to the fullest really inspires his audience to face their fears and break out of their comfort zones. Of course, this made us wonder if Louis has any fears himself. So we talked to him about that and a few other things. Got some great stories. There's got to be a sequel with this guy by the end, but we talked about the gang face-off that happened on the double-decker bus that he bought and drove around London. We talked about
crazy.
Eating many extreme dishes on his now privated or deleted, I think, Food for Louis channel, including he ate a live scorpion and a live tarantula. That gets controversial, and so we unpack all of that. And finally, how his itinerant lifestyle impacts his personal relationships.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the best, one of our all-time favorite conversations we've had on Ear Biscuits, and we know you're going to enjoy it. But first, we want to take a moment to mention today's sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas.
Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code Rhett and Link at checkout to get 10% off. Offer code Rhett and Link, 10% off Squarespace. Build it beautiful.
And now, on to the biscuit.
Our lives intersecting with yours is difficult because there's one huge variable, and that's your life. So whenever we get together, which this is this, I mean, we've passed at events, but like gotten together to create something like even this is like, oh, this is, it immediately feels more special because you're such a moving target.
Well, but it's like you're the real life example of the most interesting man in the world. That's how I think about it.
Oh, yeah.
I see that Dos Equis commercial and he says all these things and I'm like, but I know a dude who kind of does all this in real life.
Yeah.
Agree or disagree?
I mean, there's obviously the behind the scenes. It's every second of every day is not as interesting as the videos and the Instagrams. But yeah, I guess this has been the most interesting action-packed kind of couple of years of my life. This whole YouTube adventure.
Right.
So let's backtrack from this moment. Because even if I look at your channel currently, it's basically real time. I mean, you're within a day. You pretty much load something up every day.
Yeah, every day.
Do you ever miss a day?
I've started to. As of the beginning of this year, I just thought, you know, it was only me that had set the challenge of doing a daily vlog.
Okay.
And then I just thought it become a little bit unhealthy where I just thought I'm not taking any me time, I'm not taking any rest time.
Okay, but still give or take. I can look at your channel and I can tell,
I may take off like one day a week, one day a fortnight, but I'm doing at least 6 days a week.
So you got the VidCon Madness Begins video, which has been up about a day because you've been in VidCon about that long.
Yeah.
And that's almost 15 minutes. But then if I backtrack from there, I can tell, okay, you came from Hollywood. You were riding on. This is just based on thumbnail only.
Yeah,
you can get a lot from your thumbnails.
You were in Hollywood, riding horses, and then that's probably Griffith Park.
Yeah,
then you were on the beach doing a cleanup. Is this like a self-imposed cleaning up a section of the beach?
There was a charity, and we were helping. Yeah, do a beach cleanup with them. Yeah.
Okay, and then you were doing a GoPro audio test underwater.
That was in New York.
You were in New York for that.
Yeah.
doing some rooftop Instagrams, testing out some of Casey's danger toys, whatever that means. Sounds awesome.
He's got these wheels, these electric, you know, those you've seen those toys with the wheels and everyone's floating around on them.
Yeah.
They can be dangerous.
And your mom was in New York.
Yeah.
I can tell that. And then you were doing some skateboarding in Central Park.
I'm like hitching a ride on the back of one of those bicycle taxis, you know, those the guys that cycle around. And
But they didn't know you were doing it.
Not to begin with. We made friends quite quickly. He was cool.
So even, and then before you were in New York, where were you?
I can't remember.
Swimming with swans.
Oh, that was in London.
In London?
Yeah.
And then it was just two weeks before that.
I jumped in, there's a lake in Hyde Park, and I went swimming in it. There's actually like a, you're allowed to go swimming, and that's not a thing in England usually. Like these are, this is a lake full of ducks and swans.
You just look at the lake.
Yeah, usually.
But you're allowed to swim in it?
Yeah, it's like a thing. Like I didn't know it was a thing. So anyway, that was that thumbnail. We were jumping in, swimming with the swans floating around us.
But three videos before that, the first video in your London series is called Back in London. So right before that, when you were talking with animals, where were you? Italy.
Yeah, Italy, yeah.
You were in Italy.
Yeah.
And this is over the... and I've just taken you through the previous 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Italy, London, New York, Los Angeles. And then where are you going after VidCon?
I am doing a road trip up to Portland. And then on the 11th of August, I'm going to Sierra Leone in West Africa, where the Ebola outbreak started. But I'm going with the UN and World Vision, this charity. I'm going to go and
I know World Vision.
Interview some patients that have recovered, and it's going to be, I mean, that's going to be a pretty intense one, that trip.
So we're going to get into like specific places and like highlights, yeah. But let's just talk about workflow. Like, mm-hmm. What's your approach? I see, you know, you walked in here, you had your camera, you were kind of leading with the camera, and so what's your general approach, like shooting, editing, all of that? What's your workflow?
I mean, I'll just shoot as much as possible during the day. I've just found I'm happy to go through a bit more footage each day to capture those moments, and I'd rather capture a little bit too much. I think that's what I've figured out over the years of doing this. VidCon's an interesting one because a lot of it's relational, so a lot of it's just meeting people, chatting with people all day. And that's a little bit more difficult to capture the moments you want to share, because some of the conversations, it'd be weird if I was like this the whole time with my camera. Mm-hmm. So to be honest, VidCon's an interesting one. You can capture a bit of the party scenes. I go and chill in the hot tub a little bit. When I'm on the move and there's a bit more activity to the day and we're moving around a bit and there's a bit, you know, there's a slightly different workflow because I'm explaining a bit to camera how I'm feeling about where I am. I might get put my camera on someone else and ask them something, and then it's just a montage of clips of what we're up to, and then, you know, another bit chat to camera. And
so
then,
it's pretty edit heavy then, if you...
Yeah, so a lot of it, I mean, we had a panel this morning. I was with Casey Neistat and Ben Brown and Nadine, and we all me and Casey and Ben do daily vlogs, and Nadine does travel vlogging. And we were saying it's almost entirely in the edit. You know, obviously you need to capture the moments, but then it's how you cut that together. And that usually happens for me late at night. My problem is I've got that FOMO thing where I can't miss out. So I couldn't like pull myself away from a party to go and edit. I have to wait till everyone's gone to bed.
Yeah.
Which at things like this, I mean, I couldn't even edit last night. We had this amazing conversation with a few of us about how we can change the world together as YouTubers and, you know, having an impact until 5 in the morning. And then I was like,
Who was in this bunch?
Jerome Jar. Do you know Jerome Jar? He's the biggest viner in the world. And he's, you know, he's that French guy, tall French guy. He does those really funny.
Okay.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah. His whole thing is making people happy, making people smile and challenging people to face their fears. So he like does like public singing, and he goes up to people in public and like, I guess, pushes them out of their comfort zone. But anyway, we had this, I mean, I won't go into it now, but we had this incredible conversation about...
Well, just give us the conclusion. What's the answer?
Yeah, how are we changing the world? I mean, we were in bed at 5 a.m., but I want to be a part of this.
So my original point is I haven't even edited yesterday's video yet. So it chops and changes when I edit, and the workflow could, depending on what I'm doing.
Right.
So I don't want it to take over, especially conversations like this, which I'll explain. The crux of the conversation was, society's broken. We have got this incredible voice. with millions of ears potentially between the network of people. I was looking around last night at the YouTube party and I was like, I mean, this group of, you know, this small group of people here, we could 100% change the world. You don't need the politicians and the big corporates to do it. Like we could do it. And then we had this conversation of what is it that's broken and how do you mend it? And it was all around the subject of compassion and I think the three words which my friend Dave, who I'm doing a lot of cool charity ideas with at the moment, and these are his three words, are compassionate problem solvers. So finding compassionate problem solvers and getting them to release that in other people. And we started the conversation at 9:30 and ended at 5 a.m. So I'm struggling to summarize it, but it was
documented. I mean, the cameras were rolling.
Well, so. I filmed a bit and then I just put my audio on recording because I just wanted to listen back because it was just very exciting because there's a lot of amazing people and minds here and people have had incredibly different experiences, people from all over the world. But the one thing common is somehow we've built this incredible platform that people seem interested in our lives and what we're up to. And there's this potential to inspire people and make a difference. And I don't know, that's where my head's at the moment. Anyway. Yeah.
Let's skip from workflow to kind of what you want to accomplish. You know, your environment's always changing. You're always figuring out how to take the footage that you've captured, which is always compelling, but it's a testimony to your editing and all of those, the music and the style that you bring to it, but it's all for a reason. Like I really get a sense that you want to elicit something from your audience. What is that? What is your goal?
It's an interesting journey. I think I started off just wanting to document my life, and at times I'm just doing what I want to be doing regardless, and then it just happens to be, oh, I've got a camera, I'll just film this whilst I'm doing it. Other times, and what I can fall into and I want to avoid is suddenly thinking, oh, I need to make sure I'm making an interesting video today. So then I'll deliberately choose to do things to make them interesting. And I don't think that's bad in itself because it does motivate you to have a fun day and not just sit in all day. But I don't want that to be the primary drive for me is like, I have to make interesting videos. That wasn't ever the goal. It was just to share my life. I think my goal and what I would love to do is to inspire people. When they watch my videos, a lot of people say, oh, you've really helped me face my fears or dream bigger or, you know, some of it's about travel and that's my...
Like face the fears of jumping off of random rocks.
Even that's the interesting thing. A lot of my videos are literal fears, like, you know, jumping out of a plane and going to crazy countries. But I think just if you just think about fear in general, that's the thing that holds people back in life. Whether it's a fear of jumping out of a plane or whether it's a fear of leaving your house or making new friends. And if you say to, you know, if you explain to people, embrace this pushing out your comfort zone and even if it's scary, do it. A lot of people have said, you know, I wouldn't have even come to VidCon, but, you know, you watching your videos have, you know, helped me overcome that. And a girl yesterday said she wanted to go to, she'd never left her state and she wanted to go to university in New York. And she's like plucked up the courage and she's now got a place and she's going from California to New York in a month's time. And she said it's all from this general feeling of like facing your fears, which I guess people feel inspired to do. So I think this whole thing is like, you can watch my life and see what I'm up to. And there's this shallow sometimes level of like just pleasure seeking fun. I'm jumping off things. I'm having, you know, I'm here, I'm there, I'm riding horses, I'm jumping in lakes. But my hope is it's a lot deeper than that. People can see that my kind of heart behind it all is embrace life and be passionate about what you do. And hopefully that can inspire others to do it in their way. It might not be travel. It might be something different.
Well, because, you know, there's an interesting dynamic when you watch what you do. I mean, one thing is you might be tempted to think that you don't have any fears. You're fearless. That guy's fearless. I'm scared of everything, but that guy's fearless. And then the second thing might be like, man, I can't go to all those places. How can I embrace life and get the most out of life when it's going to the cubicle every day or, you know, whatever situation somebody might be in?
The classroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a tough one. And I think that's why if I choose to vlog daily, it means those off days where I'm not going out having adventures and I might just be sitting at home with my family And the most adventurous thing I do is walk down to a coffee shop and get a coffee, which often happens. It shows that life isn't this adrenaline 100% every day doing the biggest and best thing. It's there's a reality to it as well. And I think that's why I quite like the daily thing.
Right.
But what are your fears?
You know, in this big conversation we had last night, I realized where sometimes I do think I'm fearless. I realized I need to think about that a bit, because I think there's some fears I have which aren't normal, which aren't the normal classic fears.
Well, let's start to circle some candidates.
Is this a therapy session?
Sometimes it is like that.
Okay. I think I've got a fear of missing out, that FOMO thing, but I think that goes bigger than just like the party. I think that's recently been, you know, I'm in this incredible position and I don't want to miss out on the opportunities that I can have. And then it's like, well, what are the opportunities? The reality is, in my position with, I mean, brands are contacting me every day saying, we want to work with you, we want to do projects. I could easily draw down, kind of get absorbed into the world of like just making as much money as possible from this platform, which is a tough one because, yes, I've monetized my videos and I'm earning an income, and I've got dreams that require money. So I, for instance, one of them is I want to buy a big plot of forest and build a treehouse Ewok village in it and live there, because I haven't got a house at the moment. I was like, who wants a normal house? I want to live in an Ewok village.
Yes, of course.
But we have been looking.
Please build a guest room.
I want to build multiple. But we went and looked at a plot of land up in Santa Cruz, which was like, I mean, it was a big plot of land, but it was like $500,000. And I was like, I don't have $500,000. but anyway, my point is, I can work with brands if they work organically with my channel and my viewers are cool with that and understand the principle of me doing sponsored videos, and it can work. Or I can get, I'm like, well, I just do sponsored videos every day. And I, you know, and then I'm just, so that's one of my fears is I don't want to become unauthentic and I don't want to alienate my audience and I don't want to kind of sell out to things I don't believe in. Mm-hmm. But I also don't want to be on my high horse and be like, oh, I'm not gonna make money, because the reality is, though, money shouldn't be a motivation, but I think it's a brilliant tool and thing that can equip, that can really free you to do awesome things. So anyway, that's been playing. This is the most honest I've been.
Oh no,
really? And I hope this isn't like a crazy subject to talk about, but
no,
for me,
that's great.
This whole thing's a fear of mine. I don't know what to do in this situation. I don't know whether to embrace it and just do it all, or whether to like step back a bit. I'm scared of missing opportunities, and I'm scared of what if I do the wrong thing, what could happen.
Well, the Ewok village is a definite yes,
I think so.
If a brand would pay you with an Ewok village and take money out of the equation,
right,
would that simplify things?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think that money represents an Ewok village. So that's still, it's an equation.
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, just one piece of advice I would give just hearing that is, I think that the nature of your content and the nature of the things that you're doing is that there is a really, you're concerned about authenticity, and that's exactly, a great instinct, and you should keep that instinct. I think there is a really authentic way to incorporate brands that you believe in into the kinds of things that you're doing, because there's, you know, I mean, whether it was like, you know, Red Bull is an example of somebody who does all kinds of adventure things, which there's like a connection there, but just simple things like, if there's something that you use or something that you could help you do the things that you do while you're traveling, like there's a million people out there who'd want to give you something like that to talk about, you know, as a sponsor. You have to figure out how to navigate it, but it's like, there is a lot of opportunity there, and I don't think that if you maintain that authenticity, you're not going to alienate people, I would think. And then we could build that Ewok village.
Yeah.
We'll help you. We'll come and we'll stay.
Oh, yeah. Come stay. next podcast should be in one of the tree houses.
That's right.
You know, and it's not our job to solve your fears either.
It isn't.
I think it's our job to just make you talk about them.
Yeah. No, I need some processing time with
as
all
many
of this,
sponsors like, as we worked with, though, we are like, oh, you definitely should be.
We can find a way.
We can talk about that more later. I will say that I think that the challenge is to find integrations that the brand already reflects your values.
Yeah.
Because a lot of brands want
to... That's a good point.
A lot of brands want to attach themselves to us, to you, in order to, by association, put your values onto them. You know?
Yeah.
And that's what you don't want to do. You know? And that's where it... When they throw a dollar amount out there, sometimes it's difficult for us to say, oh, okay. Oh, now that there's that amount of money on the table, well, we got to have a conversation.
Right, because there are different kinds of brands.
But it's not. You can't do that. It can't be about the dollar amount.
Right, because there are different kinds of brands. I mean, Coke could come to you and say, we want to sponsor you. And at that point, it'd be like, okay, why is Louis being sponsored by this huge soft drink? But there are smaller...
And their slogan has been, enjoy happiness.
Totally makes sense, but
does that work for you? And you don't. I wouldn't answer that here.
I mean, there's just but yeah. Let's. I mean, we can. let's not talk specifics, but the general thing is, I mean, it's been tough. Some brand things I've worked with, it starts off great. You're like, yeah, I think we're on the same page. By the time this contract's signed and you're starting to get things reviewed, then suddenly everything changes and you're like, well, this was never the plan. Like, and then it's this stress of like, oh, I really don't want to start like reading lines and scripts this isn't a fictional thing. This is my life. So this is the struggle anyway. But
I think we are getting to a place where there's enough that's starting to work correctly that there's hope that there can be trust.
Yeah.
A brand can actually trust us.
Yeah.
But let's just see if that happens.
Yeah.
The other fear of missing out is an interesting one because that's just more, we're going just more inside your head and not inside your wallet, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think the other thing is like, well, I don't know if it's quite related, but like it's this whole shiny thing syndrome where I'm like, I arrive at something like VidCon and I'm like, like a kid in a candy store. I'm like, oh, and it's all about, a lot of it's relational. Oh, I want to go and chat to that person. Oh, look at this person. And then, and also people are coming up to me. They're like, Louis, we want to talk to you. I'm like, yeah, let's talk. And then it's this whole thing of, and then it's like meeting my viewers and it's like exciting, but also sometimes a bit overwhelming. And it's this whole thing of my attention is not in one place for like more than 30 seconds. And this is rare, right? Mm-hmm. Sitting down and having a conversation because usually.
So you're scared of missing out because why, you know, is the. So what?
I think part of it's just wanting to make the most of everything, you know, and make the most of life. And I mean, this is great. I don't know is the answer, but yeah, let's talk about it. I mean,
well, let's see if we can derive it because now I have a theory that as a youngster, you were locked in a dungeon and deprived of all sorts of stimulation.
Yeah,
so now you're just making
chains
up for it
at like age 18.
So let's see if we can get there.
Did you become Louis? I mean, how did you become this guy that is the most interesting man in the world, for real?
Where are you from?
Brilliant family, really close with all my family, loving home. I was
like
always...
you say brilliant and not like like extremely smart, but like just like in the British way of brilliant.
It's like when Charlie says lovely, he doesn't mean lovely, he just means great.
I mean great, yeah.
Great, got it.
Great family.
I'm sure they're smart too, though.
Yeah.
Or they're British.
Quite a typical, like, grew up in the suburbs, middle class, didn't have loads of money. My dad's been a high school teacher his whole life. He's actually been, I think, like 33 years teaching at the same school. And we've always lived in the same house. So this is a very, you know, in terms of security, it's just been same house, same town I grew up in. It's been nice. It's been great. But also this has been running strand of like my parents have been quite supportive and encouraged all of us to think outside the box. I've got two sisters as well. So it's like thinking outside of the box. And as a kid, I remember I was like, I love rainforests. I love jungles. I'm obsessed with like jungles. So they let me completely transform my bedroom into a rainforest. I had like a running waterfall. I lived in a cave. I painted trees all over the walls. I had a pet iguana roaming free in my room.
Amazing.
Oh, as long as he didn't leave the threshold of your door, that was his
and
terrarium.
Yeah, I mean,
where did that idea come from?
I don't know. My head. I mean, I just always loved, I was always in, as a kid, I was always in another world. Like, I was in fantasy land the whole time. Like, I just daydreamed my way through my childhood. I was just always playing games. Even at school, I imagined I was a spy in a military camp. Like, every day I was like, I just create this fantasy world around me to, it wasn't an escapism. I just saw
fun.
This. I love seeing the magic in the world around me. Yeah, it was fun.
Just hit me that Rainforest Cafe could be a sponsor.
Yeah, like, no,
just...
I love them. No. I went to, just, that, yeah. They've been a big, I've always loved the Rainforest
Cafe. Have
you
Cafe. Been there? Because
yeah, there's one in London.
It's like your room. But they serve food.
Yeah,
the food isn't great though. But you know,
but it is no. You're
it's
right.
a fun atmosphere.
But it is like my room. That is my room. My room was like the Rainforest Cafe. But and then it's been, I guess, just crazy ideas I've had that don't fit into the normal. Like so, let's fast forward 10 years. Like I bought a double decker bus, like the you know the London double decker buses.
Quite a fast forward. I bought a bus.
Some friends to paint graffiti all over the outside, and then I used to run. And help with young people and like bad neighborhoods around London, like gangs. And I set up a music studio in there. And I used to like help with youth clubs and churches and different people.
Did you drop out of high school in order to do this?
No. I'm fast forwarding past high school. No, I didn't go to university though. That's the interesting thing. And a lot of my friends I've talked to that are doing bigger things, you know, entrepreneurs, and they've set up big world impacting things. Didn't do degrees. I didn't go to university, which is a common thread with a lot of my friends at home.
But your parents kind of stoked that flame of instinct for you to just invent it and then do it.
Yeah, invent whatever you want to do and do it, yeah.
So what was the double-decker bus the first example of that?
I mean, it's multiple. Like, I remember wanting to do something really fun for my 21st birthday. And we could try and rewind. I'm trying to think what else. So my jungle bedroom, teenage years... I did like a work placement instead of university, and then
where was that? Where'd you work?
I did like 3D animation. I worked in an office in for Sky TV.
Oh, really?
So it's all like because I love graphics and visual stuff.
Was that before or after you were homeless for the first time?
This was before.
Okay.
So anyway, then I left the corporate world of like, I mean, it was fun. It was visual. It was graphics. But it was still an office, and almost a cubicle. Like, it was an office, and I just had the same seat every day. But then I thought, oh, you know, this isn't me. I can't do this anymore. So after 2 years there, I just left. I thought, oh, I can save some money. Because at that point, you're like, what's important to me? I'm paying rent, and it made me challenge everything I knew about society. I was like, wait, hang on. I don't think this has to be the way that I'm told it is. Like, I think I can just decide what I believe. So the belief that I needed a house, because I was like, that's a big outgoing, you know, renting a house. So I just bought a minivan, and I just thought, I can just live in here and it's free. So I left
and
my
your
job.
Parents said,
well, they were supportive. They were like, well, we know you're skilled enough to go back into a workplace if you want to, but in the meantime, go and have fun. And you know, I've got a funny story. So I went and lived in this minivan for a few years, drove around Europe with all my friends, literally survived on maybe $20 a week. I was like eating cans of food, and I just thought, I was like, I can live for free. Who needs money? And it was this whole thing of like, I just want to, at that point, I was like, time is so much more valuable. And I remember leaving my job and thinking, with all the time in the world, I can do anything. I can literally take over the world. Not in a good way. Yeah, in a good way. I can just do anything.
And you still got to put gas in that minivan.
Yeah, and that's because I was always traveling with friends. I'd literally pull in a gas station and be like, can everyone just donate, put in like $1? I mean, I'm talking American for your sake. Can everyone give me £1 to put in for fuel? So I'd get everyone to chip in. We'd put £10 in the tank. It was literally like that. I remember often running out and often having nothing and going hungry. But I love this testing the limits of what do I need and how can I adapt to create more time in my life? So it's this whole experimental time. Then I had this vision for the double-decker bus. I told everyone, I was like, I'm going to get a double-decker bus. But, you need £10,000 or whatever, $18,000 even to do that. And then someone came up to me and they said, we love your vision. Here's the money, which was awesome. Yeah.
What do you mean someone came up to you?
Well, I was involved with circles of people that like want to do cool things, right? So someone showed their friend, he showed their friend, and I found this almost like a foundation that want to support cool projects. And they said, we love the idea. Here's some money. And it was like, literally wrote me a check.
Now, is there a a belief system that your parents kind of put in place that kind of formed the structure for this? Was it just your parents saying, go off and have fun? Or, you know, was there something else?
Well, I mean, I won't go super into this, but like my, and on a personal level, I have like a kind of a faith, I grew up in church, and like,
okay.
I think part of that mentality of seeing a bigger picture to the world, it's not just the here and now, it's like, there's more going on. And I think that's what I always thought, this sense of magic, there's a spiritual realm, there's more going on. And I later on read books like The Secret, where you're like, you know, you're like putting things out there, and you know, when you, or it's like having, even if you don't want to put it in terms of God and stuff, like if you have a belief that you can do something and that something's going to happen, I honestly feel like you can make, things can happen, you know, like you can almost will things to happen,
mm-hmm.
whatever, whether you believe that's like a
spiritual, perhaps.
Yeah. Whether you believe that's like a spiritual, like God's got a path and he's, you know, doing something, or whether
that's just a law of the universe,
or whether it's a law of the universe, or however you perceive it, because I don't want to like preaching my personal beliefs, but like however you perceive it.
Well, I know that there's a Jesus shout out in your Draw My Life.
Well, I just
that
said
you were inspired. Well, by
I just
Jesus.
Wanted, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to explain, I wanted to mention it because for me personally, that is a massive impact on my drive and motivation. What's difficult in society is there's a lot of connotations and assumptions when you label yourself. If I labeled myself a Christian, for instance, it's, you just, you know, it's just like such a negative thing,
a lot
like,
of baggage,
a lot of stuff. And also there's like the whole Republican Christian Southern American thing, state, you know, everything, all of that. For me, I like the idea of, you know, Jesus was an incredible character, whether you believe he was the son of God or whether you believe he's just this cool guy that did some awesome stuff or whatever. Like, so when I say I'm inspired by Jesus and I want to follow how he taught to live, I feel like that can't be that offensive for people.
I think he did drive a double-decker bus too.
Yeah, he was.
So it's somewhere. All coming together.
Yeah. But if you look at even,
but you got the bus.
So I got the bus. Yeah, let's go back to the bus. So we got the bus. And from this motivation of like, I want to, you know, growing up, being taught as a kid, it's bigger than you. It's look at the world around you. We've care for people, love people. This is the whole message I grew up with. Like, it's about loving people. And then I'm like, well, whilst I was in the minivan, like driving around, I'd meet these kids on the street, which had nothing, didn't have good homes. Some of them had left, you know, run away from home or whatever. I remember sleeping under like in a highway, like in those, you know, the like the highway, the bridges that go over the highways, and there's like little tucked in there. I remember this kid was like distraught, he'd run away from home for some reason. The police were after him, and I don't know how I found him. Anyway, I had this conversation with him and ended up having a conversation on the phone with the parole officer, his police person that was trying to look out for him. And just, I just thought, wow, there's people really like in much more, way more broken situations in their life, and they're like struggling. And I just thought, I can help. I can try and help and love them in some way. And then I just thought this idea of, oh, if they had a place to come that wasn't like this set location, like run, like government run youth club, which there's so many restrictions and paperwork. And I just thought, oh, I've got some friends around me as well that love to help. And I just wanted to set up, and I thought, oh, I could live in the double-decker bus as well, because it's much more spacious than a minivan.
made the van work. You can make a double-decker bus work. Yeah.
Double-decker bus, had some, it kitted it out. I mean, I need to show some pictures in a minute. These guys can't see. But anyway, so I just thought it'd be great to have this safe space that I could pull up in the neighborhood. Kids could jump on board. It was all safe. Like, we had often volunteers. I even worked alongside the police. The police said at one point, this is the best thing we've ever seen. Like this project. So it was like working alongside people already in the areas, like charities, churches, the police, the council, and just helping support young people, often through just having somewhere to sit down, have a drink, have a like a hot drink of hot chocolate or something, or play a computer game, or want to record. Like, we were like making CDs of their music at the time. And so that was my motivation, was just, how can I love people in an interesting way that's not, you know, it doesn't fit into the norms of society necessarily, but it's
and,
like...
And how did the bus work? Like, it was, okay, I'm going to drive up under this bridge and say, hey guys, I got a double-decker bus. Come on, get in.
I had this sound system that was so loud, because I also used to DJ a little bit as well, just at parties for fun. So I had this sound system that was so loud, the bass speakers could set off car alarms as we drove past. So you could drive down the road and like all the cars on the side of the road, the car alarms would go. So you just start pumping music and people would come flooding. And then I had a microphone and I just hand it to a kid. I was like, do you like rap? Do you MC? And I just give them a microphone. And then suddenly they'd spontaneous MC battle on the street. And it would happen all the time. And then I found I'm not...
Just around London.
Yeah. And I don't see myself as an entrepreneur, but I soon found a way to fund it all by kids saying, can I rent this for my birthday party? And I was like, well, yes, you can. So on the weekends...
You didn't dress up like a clown though, did you?
No. On the weekends, I used to drive around kids for their birthday parties and teenagers and used to rent the bus out. And that used to fund the whole project. It was brilliant. And they would... And I even got a message on my Facebook... and it said 5 years ago, this is like last week, 5 years ago, you drove me around in your bus for my birthday party. It was the best night of my life.
That is awesome.
And I was like, wow.
Okay.
And so, but that didn't last forever.
We'd like to take a quick moment to break in and mention our sponsor who helped make today's episode possible, Squarespace.
Yeah, building a website can be tough, and even if you do know your way around coding, creating something that looks good and works well is a time-consuming affair. Whether it's for a business site, a portfolio, a restaurant, or whatever else, in this day and age, you need a website.
And lucky for you and us, Squarespace makes it easy to build beautiful websites. They provide simple, powerful, and beautiful websites that look professionally designed regardless of your skill level. Now, we've had a number of versions of RentLink.com.
Over the years, yeah.
And this latest version, designed using Squarespace, is by far the sleekest and coolest one yet.
It's sleek
and cool. Go check it out, RentLink.com.
Squarespace gives you 24/7 online support and a beautiful website for only $8 a month. You can even get a free domain if you buy Squarespace for a year. So start a trial with no credit card required and start building your website today.
And make sure to use that offer code RentLink to get 10% off your first purchase and to show your support for Ear Biscuits. And thanks to Squarespace for showing their support of Ear Biscuits by being a sponsor. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
This episode is also brought to you by Zevia. Zevia is the naturally sweetened soda with no sugar, no calories, and it's also non-GMO project verified.
Zevia is available in 15 delicious flavors, including cream soda, black cherry, cola, ginger ale, and even a tonic water, and a whole lot more, all with zero calories.
It sounds like you might need a Zevia right now, because is there something in your throat?
Yeah, let me get my Zevia.
Now, we got a case, and we put them in the fridge here at the office, and they were gone by the next day. I didn't even get to try all the flavors, but I did try grape, which is my current front runner. That's my favorite.
I tried cream soda. I enjoyed it. That's as far as I got, and everybody else drank them all.
I think we're going to have to stock our secret fridge in our office so nobody can get to
it. Yeah, and you should stock up on some Zevia for your secret fridge too. Go to zevia.com/podcast because they're giving away thousands of free six packs. Now, that's not a six pack for your belly. That is an actual six pack of Zevia, which, because they're zero calories, could help you in your quest to have an actual six pack. Who doesn't like the sound of coming home to a surprise soda on your doorstep? Head over to Zevia.com/podcast to get yours. That's Zevia, Zevia.com/podcast. Now, on to the biscuit. So you were doing the double-decker bus thing, uh-huh. And then, yeah, how did that come to an end?
So, it was pretty full on. It was most evenings a week, and then every weekend was busy for me doing that. I struggled to delegate and build a team around me. So I was the driver always. I sometimes took someone to help me with security, because then, I mean, the stories I could tell you about the craziness that with working with urban, like bad neighborhood young people.
Well, tell us one.
I mean, okay. What's the craziest one? I mean, there's one. So it's similar to American. The gang problem in London isn't as severe and there's not guns. So that helps. But there's still this like turf.
The gangs don't have guns either.
I mean, yeah, they some of them do, but not everyone. Not everyone's carrying a gun.
Okay.
But they can get hold of guns illegally. So anyway, so I was living in South London at the time, and I'd worked in this neighborhood where there's this particular gang, and I'd built relationships with a lot of the members and was just trying to be a positive influence in their life. But it's a crazy structure, like the drug dealing, the hierarchy, everything. So I took a bunch of them out for their one of their birthdays, I was like, oh, I'll just take you out. Because it wasn't like they weren't renting it. I was just like, come on, let's go and do something
freebie
for your birthday.
Freebie for the gang.
Yeah, freebie for the gang.
I kind of see where this is
anyway, going. So we go off into London.
Double-decker bus full
go of off into London, pumping music. Some of them are like emceeing. Often when I stop the bus, people crowd around and then other people want to join in. So often there'll be spontaneous MC battles with people on the street that just happen to be walking past and it attracts people over. So anyway, there's like this other gang that kind of show up and they start like emceeing. And then
they have their own double-decker bus?
No, they're just walking along the street and then somehow they ended up in the bus.
Uh-oh.
And
on the same deck, probably.
No, so this is the thing. There's two decks. There's okay. the original.
They did separate.
The original gang members were chilling upstairs. I'm like, oh, no, they're probably playing on the PlayStation or whatever. This other gang.
Oh, there's a PlayStation.
Yeah.
Thanks for mentioning that.
Oh, there's like a 52-inch plasma screen at this point. Anyway, so downstairs, this other gang come in and they start like chat, like emceeing on the mic. And then they start representing their ends, which is like their neighborhood. And they start shouting out. Because there's this turf war, right?
Oh, gosh.
So they're like North London. I'm like, oh, like because my gang is from South London. So I'm like, anyway, I'm like, I pulled over. I'm just gonna go upstairs and check that this is safe, like that, because I can kick them off. I can come down. Like, walked upstairs. The gang I'd originally come in had pulled over balaclavas on their face. Five of them, blacked out, all black. Balaclavas, black masks. I don't know if you...
Okay.
In England, we call them balaclavas. So it's just the eye holes, the mouth, where you're going to do a robbery or something, right? And they'd pulled out, like, knives. And I'm like, whoa.
I'm glad you went upstairs.
Yeah, I'm like, whoa, guys, chill. Like, this is not happening. You are not having a gang fight in my bus. Like, and because I built relationships, and they actually respect me. So I'm like... So I'm like, take those masks off, calm down. I can tell these other guys to like get off. Like, it's fine. You know, we don't need to start a fight over this. But what was crazy is they ended up making friends. They came down, it was all chilled, and I was trying to be like, look, you don't like, why are you fighting? Because you live in a different area. This makes no sense. I think in a gangs thing, maybe like there's drug territory where there's dealers and stuff. Anyway, I managed to like
there's an ecosystem of
commerce. I managed to somehow make this bond over the music.
Everybody's equal on a double-decker bus once you get on the same deck.
And also because we're driving around, we're driving in and out of different areas, and we're not in like, oh, you're in my location, you're in my location. Yeah, we're just driving around.
You're confusing them. They're going in their territory, then they're going in somebody else's territory. This is like the most genius gang solution there's ever been.
So, I mean,
drop them all off at the police station.
I've had to confiscate weapons off guys. I've had to like physically break up fights. It was a crazy time, actually. I mean, I should probably write some of these stories down, but
it sounds like, logistically it started to become too much to manage.
Yeah. And I think it was just, it was tiring. I felt like I was achieving the bigger thing I'd wanted to. And then what happened was the YouTube stuff started alongside this, right? So I, with some friends, started eating crazy things just as it was never my thing. It was just like a silly thing I did. It was this whole thing of like questioning society. Why can't I eat a spider? Let's face my fears, you know. And
so the first thing you ate was a what?
I actually drank on my Food for Louis channel, which is the first channel I had on YouTube. We had some old footage on a mobile phone of me like eating a little spider off the floor, and it was
it
was never meant for YouTube. It was just me messing around with some friends, and they'd be like, eat that spider, it's a dare, right? So I'm like, okay, because I'd already at that stage already like gone jungle trekking and traveling, and like I'd seen like there's this, why not, I can eat spider. And anyway, so I did that, and then
you had seen people eat a spider probably.
Yeah, exactly. So then I did that, and then so we had a few clips that we put on YouTube, because we're just like, oh, why don't we make this a thing? And then my friends were egging me on, and they were like, they were encouraging me. And then I drank a whole bottle of wasabi sauce. And then things started getting more extreme.
This
was 2011.
Okay.
Maybe end of 2010.
So you had this footage off of YouTube. You start the channel, you're going to call it Food for Louis, because, hey, you already had some eating stuff.
Yeah.
And then they just keep giving you more stuff. It kind of
escalated alongside the stuff. So I was only doing
snowballed.
Yeah, it was like once a week, and I'd be doing my bus thing still all week, and then once a week go around my friend's house. What am I going to eat this week? Oh, we bought you a box of crickets. See if you can eat them all. Or, you know, and then it just escalated and people were suggesting things in the comments. That's when the video started going viral a little bit. And then that's when we realized, we were like, huh, this could be a thing.
Like, oh yeah, people like this.
People like this. And also at this point, a few other UK YouTubers reached out to me because I'd starting to get some traction and interest. And these were the younger guys that were coming up. So there's this whole crew in England. And it was just the perfect timing. And they wanted to make friends with me. And I was like, huh, so what do you do? What do you eat? I had no idea. And they were like, oh, no, we did, you know, we vlog in our bedroom. And I was like, I didn't even know there was people on YouTube. I just watched music videos on there or like cat videos. Or like fail compilations. So I'm like, oh, okay, so you're chatting in your bedroom.
What do you eat?
Yeah, so you're chatting in your bedroom.
And you're not eating the mattress or jumping out of the window? You're just talking.
Yeah, just talking. I'm okay, like, huh, right. Okay, interesting. So chatting to these guys, and that's when I came to, I think at this point it might have been 2012. I came to a VidCon anyway, as Food for Louis. And met a bunch of the American YouTubers, and I was like, this is an amazing community. And at this stage, I got in a ton of trouble in the UK for what I was eating. I actually got threatened with arrest, taken to court for eating a goldfish, which in England is actually illegal. So the RSPCA showed up at my house.
It was live and swimming.
It was swimming around. I poked it out of the bowl, chomped it up quickly. And in my opinion, still didn't cause it distress or like pain, like unnecessary pain.
You didn't swallow it live.
I bit its head off.
So, and then you swallowed it.
Yeah, then I ate it all. So in my theory, my thing was, if you're going to eat meat, don't be naive and think that the animal's not dying for you to eat that, right? So I took it to the extreme of like, well, I didn't like the fact that I'm killing this animal. That's not what I'm finding pleasure in. It was just pushing the limits of like, how can I challenge myself to think outside the box and eat something crazy? And it turned out I ended up eating live animals like scorpions and spiders. And that's what I think a lot of the viability of the videos is like.
Okay.
People thought I was a psychopath, right?
Well, okay. So let's explore a few of these.
Because that was our first introduction.
Your introduction.
I think the tarantula one was the first one. And I was just,
I
couldn't stop watching. I had to watch all of them.
Tell us about the tarantula.
That was the most scary. One of the most scared time in my life, because this tarantula was when we bought it from the pet shop, right? They wouldn't handle it. They were like, you can't handle this species of spider. These it was like some Brazilian, I can't remember exactly what it was. Anyway, so they kind of put, you know, two of them were like standing back, pushing it into this plastic case. I walked home with it, did a bit of research, like, are the tarantulas dangerous? And it was mainly like, you know, they're not fatal. It hasn't got fatal poison, but it's going to hurt a lot if it bites you. And especially around your mouth, throat area. Like, I'm like, oh, they're swelling. Yeah, I can see there being a serious danger here. Also, it has these hairs all over it that can like flick. It flicks at predators.
It fires barbs.
Yeah, at predators to deter them, right? So I'm thinking all of this. I'm like, yeah, this is scary.
And what was the biggest, most ambitious thing you had done up to that date?
I'd eaten the scorpion already, which was again scary because of the stinger and the pinces, and it grabbed my mouth.
Yeah, well, grabbed your mouth.
Tell us about the scorpion. Pause that one.
I started on the crickets, right? Live crickets. And I'm sure I'd like eaten live crickets and things in the garden or whatever. Like,
yeah, sure, like all kids accident. Do.
Well, you know, I mean,
there's the statistic. Everyone's eaten X number of spiders
while sleeping. Yeah, I think that's.
But the scorpion was what type of scorpion did it have? The stinger.
An emperor scorpion. It's the biggest species of scorpion. It had a stinger. So I upgraded from. I think I'd done. I might have done cockroaches before that, which were pretty vile. Like the taste of pretty vile. But the scorpion was the first kind of arachnid predatorial little thing that I'd eaten, where I was like, this is going to attack me rather than just yummy.
In the video, you hold it by its tail so you don't have the stinger, and then begin to drop it down
and
into
it
your
grabs
mouth
my tongue.
And the pincers grab your tongue, yeah. And then you just kind of like bring it right in and just
I mean, that was scary, but as soon as I had the stinger, because the stinger is the dangerous part, right?
So you ate everything up into the stinger.
Up in the stinger, pop that out, put it on the plate. The great thing of these videos, I mean, I'll fast forward to why I moved away from this, and then I've actually now taken these videos down, which I'll explain in a minute. But it was all my friends were crowded behind the camera laughing and egging, you know, but there's a lot of banter. They were like saying funny things. That was part of the fun of it. It wasn't, do you know Bear Grylls? He does like the Man versus Wild.
Yeah.
So the whole time I'm like, this is no different from going out into the jungle, pulling over a tree stump and finding a spider and then, you know, eating it, which he does all the time. So everyone's like, wow, like he's showing us how to survive.
Well, if Bear Grylls jumped off a cliff, would you?
He did way, in my opinion, way more extreme things than I did, but kind of got away with it as like, oh, he's out in the wild, right? I'm like, oh, I'm just in my friend's living room. Like,
you bought it at a pet store.
Sitting on the couch, yeah. But it's the same thing. It's just it's just a weird out of context, right? So the scorpion ate, cool. Tarantula, next step up, because now, I can't hold the sting of the tarantula, right? It's got two massive teeth, fangs. Yeah. Like, these are like an inch long fangs.
Just a question about the scorpion. If it's got venom that can come out of the stinger, when you eat it, isn't that venom...
No, it's all in the thing. It's all in the stinger.
Also, there's a difference between being injected into your skin like a venom and... poison. It's different. So you can, some venom, like once you digest it, it breaks down, it's like protein, whatever. Like,
okay,
so I did enough research to be like, I'm pretty sure this isn't gonna poison me. It's not a poison. It's just, you know, it's just if it stings you, that's like, you know, like bee stings are acidic or whatever, it injects this acid into. I'm pretty sure your stomach can cope with that kind of, if I ate a bee, I don't think that would hurt either, like as long as it didn't sting me on the way down.
But you had to find this out. There's only so much you can wiki.
Yeah, I know. And we really didn't do much research either. And that was part of the fear.
Yeah, because you did say pretty sure. I was pretty sure it wasn't going to
happen. Well, we had this whole joke. There's a guy on the show. I mean,
it was a doctor, right?
We can move on in a minute. But he wasn't a doctor. He was my friend, and we called him...
The doctor.
The doctor. And we were like, is this cool? And he's like, yeah. It was this whole, like, very, like, blasé, like, yeah, sure, yeah, whatever. Like, it was... And we made a whole joke of it. He actually, when these videos started to go viral, his employer asked him to not be on the videos anymore. Asked him to step away because they didn't feel he was representing the company. You know, they asked him to stop appearing on them. So we at one point replaced him with a dog, my friend's pet dog, who was just like there in the same jacket, just looking like
accomplished the same thing.
Yeah, we're like, is this cool? And the dog was just like looking.
Yeah, the dog gave the okay. Yeah.
Okay, so now re-describe the tarantula.
So the tarantula, it's got these poisonous barbs or whatever, and it's got these fangs. And I'm like, oh, if I don't eat this correctly, it will bite me because they're ferocious and it's a very vicious kind of attack thing. Like, you shouldn't handle it. I looked online. I researched eating tarantulas. I found these Amazonian kids. They would pull these tarantulas out the holes in the ground. And the way that they grabbed them, I was like, oh, okay, this is how you grab a tarantula.
I always wondered why you grabbed it. I was like, how did he figure this out?
So these kids, like, what they do is they pin it down. So you push a finger in its back, and they pull its legs up. So all its legs are above it.
Yeah.
So it can't, like, run away, and it can't grab it. So, and then you just pick the legs up, and they're all, like, you know, bent backwards. You know,
The legs are pointing toward the palm of your hand, and you're holding it.
And then you're holding it, and then it's almost like a lollipop. It's like the legs are the, you know, and then it's this almost, body.
And you've got the underside of
the... underside of the tarantula. But then the fangs...
It's exactly like a lollipop.
It's a spider lollipop. But the fangs were still there, and I was like, if I need to... Also, I don't like the idea of causing unnecessary pain to animal. I eat meat, right? So in my head, I'm like, right, I eat meat. I never research how that meat's been killed. The reality is, and the sad reality is for a lot of us, we eat meat. We don't research where it's come from. It's come from slaughterhouses. It's come from, you know, battery chickens where they don't get looked after. They're in agony their whole lives often. So I got a lot of criticism for my channel, by the way. Like, people hated it. Some people loved it, some people hated it. It was very controversial. But my thing wasn't like, I'm going to torture this spider, I'm going to pull its legs off one by one, and then, you know, I just was like, my thing was, I'm just going to eat it as fast as possible. I don't want to put it through unnecessary pain. So within seconds, my idea is, within seconds, I want it to be dead, right? And also,
and you're explaining this on camera.
Some of it, yeah. Then I'm like, I don't want to, also don't want to get bitten. So I'm like, if I just bite its head off, quick, you know? So I'm like hovering in front of my mouth. This is where I honestly black out. I can't remember what happened next. And I can watch it on video, but I blacked out from the fear because I'm like, if I miss my mouth or something and then it sinks its fangs into my lip, like That's what I'm scared of. Like, I got a spider bite in my mouth. Like, imagine, like, and then the barbs. I'm like, this could go all over my face. My whole face could swell up. So these are real things that could happen, right? But I just went for it. I was, you know, shaking. My friend who was filming was one of them guys, the back of the room, shaking. Like,
even right now, as you talk about it again, I'm like kind of backing away from you.
So anyway, I bit the head off. All done. Really scary, but yeah, done.
Well, not really.
Oh, and then you had to get it down.
Then you got
to
actually chew it and consume it.
At that point, once it's dead, I know it's not going to bite me. I'm chewing. That's fine. That's just...
Because did you also do research, or at least ask the dog, that if it was okay, that once you bite the head off, not only can it not bite you, but it can't like fire its barbs? Because I would be afraid about the barbs coming out off of the legs as it was trying to get down my throat.
I honestly didn't research it. I just assumed once I got it in my mouth, those things, spiky things, wouldn't be as bad. But
were they?
It was all right. It was actually okay.
What was the texture like? Was it like paper mache?
The legs were quite chewy. The bulb, the bit at the back, like the... I don't know what that is.
Butt.
Yeah, the spider butt was squidgy and like goopy. And it had like... It was like... creamy inside. I don't know.
It had spider juice inside of it.
Yeah. And what was the taste?
It was kind of tasted, I don't know, like mushrooms. I don't know. I can't really explain the taste. It wasn't
bad. Had blacked out.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's not spend too much longer on it. But the fact is, I did all these things. I got in a lot of trouble because, you know, and what I was going to say is the RSPCA, which is the Royal Society of Prevention Against Cruelty to Animals, showed up at my house.
They came to your house.
Yeah, I don't know how they found my house. With literally an FBI-style file on me. Like, literally show me, flick through, documentation, every video. Like, you know, and their point was, they were like, we're against what you do, and you've taken it too far. And they were waiting to pin something on me.
So they were waiting to pin something on you.
Yeah, so they were waiting to pin something on me. They, So this goldfish thing, right? They're like, this is in the UK illegal. Now, what I could have done is say, I didn't film it in the UK. Filmed in France or something, you know? Because I was traveling at the time. I was doing different things with friends. But I was like, something in me was like, no, I'm just going to be honest. Like, I did film this. I don't think there's a problem with it, right? And if I'm going to get in trouble, like, I found that a bit ridiculous. Like, you can go fishing in the UK. You can catch, you can shove a hook through a fish's mouth, pull it out of the water, slap, you know, stab it in the head, mm-hmm. take it home, cook it, and eat it. I'm like, stabbing it in the head with a knife and chomping and biting its head off with my teeth. Can I catch a fish in the river with a hook, take it out, and then bite its head off, and then take it home and cook it and eat it? You know,
yes,
this is my whole theory, right? So I'm like, why pulling it out and biting its head off and then eating it? How is that illegal? I don't understand. Anyway, they took me to court. They took me to court, and it was in all the tabloids, all the newspapers, national press. It was like, psycho guy, you know, eats. I was like hammered by the press about it, and no one was on my side because it's not like I'm standing for an important issue here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just like who's this weird guy, and he's eating goldfish. This is wrong. England's big on animal cruelty, but so am I. I don't want to cause animals pains, but then I'm like, I am also a meat eater. And I know animals are dying for me to eat. This is my point. This is my whole, the premise is like...
Are you making this point from the witness stand?
Yeah, I'm like talking to the judge and he thinks it's ridiculous, but they're spending, the charity is spending, and the
RSPCA... He thinks their case is ridiculous?
Yeah. The RSPCA is the biggest charity in the UK. They have the most donations. Millions of people donate their private money to them. They spent thousands...
They must have really good commercials.
They spent thousands... Well, it's called...
On
all
BBC
the, it's all the puppies and the kittens and like poor puppy... You know,
Sarah McLachlan is singing. We have,
more than any human charity, right? Which I find a bit crazy. Like, I love animals, but there's people dying as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're spending thousands of people's donations money on lawyers to pin me down for this. And I'm like, really? Like, really? Anyway... So it got to the point where I was asking all my friends, I didn't know what to do.
Did you hire a lawyer?
Yeah. Okay. I had to pay a lawyer. I got to the point where I was like, I don't need to fight this battle. I never set out to be an advocate for like the right to eat goldfish. So I just said, out of court settlement, I was like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it again, right? They gave me an RSPCA caution. It wasn't a criminal thing, just a caution. So like, for instance, if I then are caught again, like abusing a pet, then I actually get issued this warrant thing saying I can't own a pet. And then the police can confiscate me or whatever. So I was like, that was the thing. I had to admit that I was wrong, and there was no criminal thing filed or anything. And I was like, okay, look.
But you didn't have to delete the videos.
No, I didn't have to. And they said like making a public apology, and I think maybe I tweeted something, but it was at this point they were like, no, I did. I did have to delete the goldfish one.
Okay.
No, yeah. But at this point, some animal rights activist groups had gone online, and they had gone onto my channel and just started flagging all the videos. So like 8 of my videos got taken down the day after all the tabloids showed me online. So like ton of people started, my channel actually got removed by YouTube because so many people flagging it. I went back to YouTube and I was like, hey, look, I don't agree with this. I don't think it's all wrong. Some of it was me drinking bottles of wasabi sauce, you know, maybe the goldfish was too far, but that's an opinion thing. Anyway, my channel got put back up. I snuck a couple of videos back on, the same videos that got removed, you know, and it all started going again. And I was like, I think I did a few more videos after that. But at that point, I was like, I think one of my friends said to me, is this what you want to be remembered for? Is this your legacy in life? Is this channel? I'm like, no, it really isn't. I'm not a psychopath. I'm not. I know people are like, yeah, whatever. Like, you're definitely a psychopath. But I'm not. I just thought it was just a weird thing I was doing that kind of got way out of control. But the positives are that I'd met this YouTube community, I'd realised there's a bunch of different content online, and I just thought, I can do anything I want. So at that stage, someone said, why don't you just film your life and just what you get up to every day and adventures, stop eating crazy things. And then that's what I started doing at the end of 2012, maybe.
And it wasn't a guarantee that it was going to work.
Might not have worked. I started a brand new channel, didn't even really push people over from...
scratch.
Yeah, I probably had 400,000 subscribers on Food for Louis, and I just, from scratch, started again. Didn't even really push my subscriber base over, because those people didn't care about me. They were like, that's that weird guy eating weird stuff again. Mm-hmm. They weren't like, oh, we love you, Louis.
Right.
So then I started from scratch, got my YouTube buddies that I knew in the community to help me, and just built the channel from scratch again, started the daily videos, took my double-decker bus on a tour around the UK. And at this stage, this is where the transition was, going back to the start. Then I was like, okay, I'm gonna take a pause on the bus stuff, the working with gangs and all that, go on a little tour, and then go and spend some time in LA. Came out here beginning, end of 2012, I think. And then it just all took off from there. Met cool people, started having cool adventures, documenting it all. And now I'm here with a much, much bigger channel. I surpassed my channel quite quickly.
Right.
And now I'm occasionally recognized as Food for Louis, but now I've really have like rebranded, redefined who I am online. And it's a bit of a mad story of how I got here, really.
Right. Well, at this point, with it being, you know, you said, okay, when you started with the double-decker bus, you kind of took it on a tour. But at this point, it's just one adventure after another, is what it seems like. And is it now the adventures are for the purpose of the exhibition, right? They're so people can see it. So now it's just not, is it like, I've got to plan the next adventure because I'm going to continue to bring people along for the ride? Is that sort of how it works?
Well, yeah, this is the interesting thing. So now I'm like, I can fall into this trap of like, I need to keep having adventures so people keep watching. Or I can be like, look, people are invested in me, whether I'm jumping off cliffs or, you know, doing adventurous things, or just being me. So I really want to be doing the things that I care about and want to do, and the world-changing projects, and then I think I will naturally just be doing that in an adventurous way anyway.
And let's qualify the word adventurous here, because okay, what's the new equivalent to eating the scorpion and the tarantula? Yeah. Because what's the craziest thing that you've done in your Fun for Louis adventures?
Well, this,
just to qualify that.
This, the connection here, and it goes back to what we were saying before, is it's about facing fears, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was all about me facing fears. Every time I had a new challenge, it was like, can I do this? Sometimes it's a fear of it's going to bite my mouth, or sometimes it's a fear of like, this is going to be the worst tasting thing I've ever eaten. And now in my traveling and adventures, it's not, I mean...
What's rivaled that?
What has rivaled that? I mean, there's been some kind of adrenaline style things, sporty things that have been scary, like, you know, jumping waves on this motorboat, on this like high-powered engine boat in South Africa, and there's like sharks in the water, and there's like crazy high waves, and like, I didn't have a life jacket on. I remember that's probably the most scared I've been on a activity thing. But I think sometimes, I don't know. It comes back to what are my fears right now? I think sometimes the things I'm doing aren't necessarily my greatest fears, but they are things that people typically can be scared of, right? So going to new places, connecting with people and making friends, just doing things day to day that's typically slightly outside people's comfort zones. So hopefully being like, you know, I can do this, guys. And also showing that it's not as scary as they think. So a lot of fear is in our mind. It's not, things aren't black and white. This is a scary thing you should be afraid of. I mean, there's some basics, human fears, which are good. But a lot of it is just in your mind. Like, and if I can show people just, this is, you can do this. Like, it's easy to do this. It can encourage people to do it.
Well, you know? What do you think is, what's one of the coolest things you've done? Like, it stands out in your mind, like, you kind of go back there in your own memory, whether you rewatch the video or not. Like, this was a surreal moment. Maybe it's this sunrise at this place. Maybe it's not jumping the wave with the sharks. It's not the craziest thing.
The coolest thing I can think of this year was I went to, I've got a pilot friend, and we ended up flying this two-seater plane around Namibia in Southwest Africa. And we went to this tribe called the Himba tribe, and they were like the most primitive people group I've ever met. They are pretty much naked. They wear like clay in their hair, and they live in mud huts, right? And they speak this tribal language, and they're just very, it's just so basic, and they just herd goats. That's their thing.
And when you showed up, what were they thinking?
Well, there was a guide who translated a bit. He grew up in the area, but then had modernized his lifestyle, right? So he grew up as a kid in super rural, primitive, then modernized, gone to a school and like started wearing clothes and learned a bit.
So he brought you back.
So he came back with us, and this particular tribe had said, look, we're happy for tourists to come. And it's funny because they didn't even really have a concept of money. They just said, bring us food. So you bring a big bag of like maize, and you give it to them and say, here's the maize. Can we just come and have a look around? It felt interesting because some of the people, there wasn't a bunch of tourists there, but at one point this German guy showed up with a camera and just no real interaction with them, just taking photos, right? And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, it's tough, isn't it? Because it's amazing to us and we want to capture it and be like, look at these people. Like, but you'd also don't want it to feel like a zoo, like they're...
Yeah.
You know, so I really wanted to interact with them, engage, and I don't speak their language, but I was trying to have fun, and they were showing me how to milk the goats. The kids were loving it. I actually ended up showing them an iPad I had in my bag with a photo booth with the thing that squashes your face.
Yeah.
And this photo went viral on the internet recently as the best photo on the internet.
Of
these kids holding this iPad and all grinning and going crazy at this. so
love it.
This day was incredible for me, and I wanted to stay there. I was like, can we stay here for a few days? I want to like live like them. I want to learn how. So we went for a few hours, and we went back that night, and they showed us how they cooked their food, and I was like helping them cook their food and making a complete mess of it. And they were just so happy, so content, had no material possessions. Apart from a couple of them who actually had like Nokia 3310 phones, they didn't know how to text. They just used them, and they used to charge them down the road at a solar panel. But they had nothing else. They had no clothes, but like a mobile phone hanging around their neck.
Where do you put that?
They hung it around their neck.
Yeah, hang around their neck, which is a kind of wild thing. So that, I think that stands out as like, it's a totally different culture. These people are content. They're not in the rat race. They don't care. The crazy thing is, there's the full option around them with other villages to modernize, and they just don't want it. They're like, no, we love our like traditions.
And you
it's
have
not the... like they're oblivious to it, and uh-huh. they see the iPad and they're like, cool, and then they're like, go and play with their goats as well. Like, do you know what? It's not a thing. Like, they don't want to be. And what I loved is they didn't seem to want to chase after this technology and this other stuff.
They didn't have the fear of missing out.
Yeah, I guess they just were so. They just seemed so content, and it was epitomized by this girl who was obviously thirsty, running around with this little cup, and she just grabbed a goat and just milked the goat into. She was tiny, like five. Milked the goat into a cup, and they just walked off sipping the cup.
Oh, that sounds
like,
amazing.
I was just like, oh, she's just chilling. Like, just want a cup of milk. Yeah, cool. Got
straight
the milk.
From the teat.
Yeah, I was just like, she's just got everything she needs, you know?
Now, you had the option to stay there. You had the inclination to spend more time with him, but you didn't do it. You could have.
I could have. They specifically, at the time, the men of the village were off herding some goats in another place. And they said it might not be appropriate to stay just with all the women and children. Oh. But I would have. If the men had been there and it was cool, I would have changed plans and I would have slept there. I would have. Like, I was so fascinated by this culture. I was like, I'm willing to do this, you know? I'd love to learn. And also interact and have fun with them. It's not about like, oh, look at these weird people take photos and leave. Like, I'm like, let's, you know. This girl was showing me how to make fire and everything. It was brilliant. I loved it. I'm babbling, but that's what it was the coolest time of my vlog.
That's
so
pretty cool.
Well, okay. So, and speaking of women, you just said you're being with women in a village. This kind of thing, living this life,
this has got to
get the ladies a little excited.
What?
Being the most interesting man in the world, this is sexy, you know? And I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to tell you something. My wife has a little bit of a crush on you. And here's why.
Okay.
She likes guys with dreads. She likes tall guys. I'm a tall guy, but I don't have dreads.
Right.
And I remember the first time we saw your videos and then you were going to be I was like, I guarantee you this is the kind of guy that my wife would have a crush on.
So you showed the videos? You like served him up on a platter?
No, me and the boys were watching some of the crazy, my kids just absolutely loved the Food for Louis videos.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like she sought it out, but I was like, you like this guy, right? This guy's your type. And she was like, yeah.
She just owned it.
Yeah. I'm not threatened. I'm in a happy marriage, 14 cool. years and going.
He's not in the same county as you most of his life.
Well, and exactly. Yeah, you're constantly traveling the world, so she can't.
This is the thing. is the thing. Girls, I think, my experiences and some of the comments from viewers, The start is like most of my audience pulled in were like teenagers, right? Because a lot of my friends had their teenage audience.
Right.
So, and I'm old enough that they're not, it's a bit weird. I'm a little bit too old for them to have a real like obsession crush on like some of these young superstar YouTubers that are like, you know, the Justin Bieber style. Like.
Right.
So a lot of the interaction is you're cool and you're like an older brother kind of vibe.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm like, I love that vibe. Like, you know, I can inspire you guys. I can try and be a good role model. That's much better. So I'm not getting that same obsession. But then I do meet a lot of people a little bit older that are like,
feelings.
What I have gathered is my lifestyle is very like a romantic idea. I just travel the world, have fun.
Exactly.
But the reality is there's no security in that. I don't know what I'm doing day to day often. I'm completely erratic. There's not much structure. When you start breaking it down and start thinking about it, not many people want to live how I do. And it sounds romantic. It's like, oh, you live the best life. I wish I could live like you. I don't think everyone's built for it. I honestly don't. I think a lot of people need like a bit of like that. They want the home. They want somewhere they can just, you know, I'm home. You know, they want that comfort. I'm built differently. I'm wired differently. I don't need that. And I think when people might initially find this concept romantic, but the amount of people that step in and be like, oh, yeah, I want to do that, everything. And really, when they think through it, I'm going to move out. And
Has that happened, though? Have you been in relationships that were stressed because of your lifestyle?
Before YouTube, yeah, I've always loved traveling. And I didn't see eye to eye with one of my ex-girlfriends. And she was like, she's like, I don't like it when you travel. And I was like, but I love traveling. And I was like, come with me. And then she didn't want to. And I was just like this isn't...
was gone.
Yeah,
she was out.
It just didn't work. So,
what about now? Well, what's your love life like?
I don't talk about that, but let's talk about more vaguely. Like, I think
let's keep it vague.
A lot of viewers speculate. I hang out with a lot of cool girls on my channel, right? And everyone's always speculating, who am I in a romantic thing with? At this stage, I don't want to like. Talk about that, but all I will say is like I think at the moment in my life the only way a relationship of any sort could work is if I was traveling more often with someone that they had a more nomadic approach to life. I would never be a fan of like like a long distance thing where I had to go back to somewhere to see that person. So I think that's always been the thing I've thought, well, I've adopted a lifestyle which creates means that meeting someone and being able to start and sustain a relationship is really hard. I'm setting the bar really high. Like I'm saying, I don't live anywhere. I travel the world and I film my life every second of every day. Like it's quite a lot to suddenly, if someone's like, you know, oh, I want to be with you. I mean, there's a lot that comes with that. There's a lot of conditions, you know? And also then I'm like, you know, how far, if I just fell head over heels in love with someone, what would I sacrifice? Because the reality is, and I've seen it around, like daily vlogging isn't great, isn't always conducive with like a healthy relationship that where you've got, where you've got like a marriage and you start thinking about a family and stuff. Some people have done it. There's channels where, you know, there's families that do it, but I don't know. That's all future stuff I need to think through, but the whole thing works a lot easier with this concept of I'm just me, I'm Louis, I'm single and I'm just doing my thing. And I don't need to worry about like someone else's decisions in it all.
Well, I think it's going to be, you know, my prediction is there will be a magical moment at some point in the future. You'll be, you know, somewhere in a savanna, like riding on the back of a lion, and you'll come up on this,
beautiful
woman, like drinking directly from a, you know,
zebra teat.
A buffalo.
Yeah.
And, or yeah, let's just say a zebra, drinking directly from a zebra, and you'll lock eyes. And it'll be like,
well, I'm riding past the lion. I'm like, hey.
Yeah. And then she'll be like, I'll get on that lion with you.
Yeah.
You're going to have to find somebody.
Or he'll get under the zebra with her.
Either way, yeah. You're going to be going the same direction. And, you know, and better yet, she's going to already be vlogging it. You know,
yeah,
She'll be down there next to the zebra teat with a camera on herself.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, you understand me. Let's make this happen. So, ladies, if you're out there and you're currently suckling a zebra and filming it, then we've got the man for you.
Ladies, like there's multiple.
yeah,
all their heads popped up at once, like, huh? This has been fun, man. Yeah. I think this may be one of my favorite biscuits ever made.
We need to plan an adventure together is what we need to do.
Because I'm so up for that.
Our adventures have to be very well planned in advance. But I didn't even tell you about this. You may have seen the email, but I met a guy last night. You may have seen that weird email that came in from Australia. This guy was like an adventure planner dude in Australia for years. And I was telling him about one of our dreams is to do some off-roading and surfing combo thing in like Australia. He was like, oh, I know all the people to hook you up with.
Don't be talking about it in front of Louis because then he's going to do
it. No, but we do it together.
Let's do it together, yeah.
Oh, okay, we'll invite him.
Yeah, okay.
He's still here. He's listening.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Thanks for hanging out, man. This is great.
Really fun, really fun.
All right.
And there you have it, our conversation with Louis. We had a lot of fun with Louis. I was going to make a play on his channel name, which is Fun for Louis. We didn't have fun for him. We had fun with him in the conversation. Let him know what you think by tweeting at him. His handle is Fun for Louis. Use hashtag EarBiscuits, y'all. Tweet at that guy.
It is definitely difficult to have a conversation with a guy like this and not think, man, I need to get out more. Which I think is, you know...
A good thing.
It's a good thing because we should get out more. We should. I'm not necessarily saying that we should be eating any live stuff or we should necessarily be buying double-decker buses, even though all that's exciting.
Well, he does neither of those anymore, in fairness.
Right.
So.
But this whole idea of squeezing all of the excitement and experience out of life in as many places as you can, that's something that... I'm going to try to make happen just in my commute Southern California area. That's as far as I get.
That's exactly what I was going to say was it's not like you've got to like dive into the Amazon to experience life. I think the challenge for us is within the parameters of the life that is ours that we have, you know, with our wives, with our kids, with our friends, with our coworkers, within the context of commuting, finding a way to squeeze the realness out of it, live in that moment.
Yeah, and there is something that we can both begin doing right now that doesn't require travel. We could grow dreads.
I just started. Could you tell?
No, you didn't wash your hair today?
I did, but I just started. I didn't watch it right now again.
Okay, so that's it.
We don't watch Dreads?
We're not gonna. It's a complicated process. Just wiki it, man.
Okay.
It involves washing and not washing. You can't just put shampoo, normal shampoo, and put your hands in there and separate your hairs, because then you can't make dreads. You have to let them lock up, and then once they lock, there is a way to wash them, but it's not a traditional way.
But we're not going to talk about that, because that's going to be wikied.
That's
okay.
Right.
Okay. That's also your assignment. Start growing your dreads and experience life to the fullest. Those things are... You don't have to do both. You can choose one or the other.
But they are mutually exclusive.
No, they're not. And we'll talk at you next week, guys.